new place to get your COVID shot is opening up on the city's north side. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Hope you had a good weekend. Just ahead, we welcome Representative Al Lawson calling us from Washington, and he'll tell us about Jacksonville's new federal vaccination site at Gateway. Already getting your questions? Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, how WJCT television is becoming Jack's PBS. But first this hour, the latest numbers on the pandemic. NPR says today the U.S. death toll from the coronavirus is expected to top 500,000. The pandemic has claimed the lives of more than 2.4 million people worldwide, but the death toll in the U.S. is the highest in the world, even though we have less than 5% of the global population. Breaking the numbers down to Florida, the total number of cases since the pandemic started in this state is at 1.86 million and nearly 30,000 deaths so far. Meanwhile, there are more opportunities opening up around the city to be vaccinated against COVID-19, which is very good news. A new federal vaccination site at the Gateway Town Center will open March 1st. This is a partnership between FEMA and the Biden administration, and the new site will have the capacity to vaccinate up to 3,000 people every day. Representative Al Lawson, Democrat of North Florida, is on the line from the nation's capital to tell us more. Congressman Lawson, always good to have you on the show. Good morning.
Morning, Melissa. Great to hear your voice.
Good to have you with some very important information, and give us a call as we speak with Representative Al Lawson about the new federal vaccination site coming to Gateway Town Center, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. So this is for residents 65 plus. We understand it, Representative Lawson. Tell us what we can expect when this new site opens up March 1st.
Well, I think it's going to be great because Gateway Mall, you know, was selected because of the area of town where they can reach the most vulnerable citizens, which is great. And I think that one of the things we have to do is to try to get this vaccine to all areas in the state and in our areas where people probably have problems with transportation and so forth. And I think it'll be good for the community because we can get the churches and everyone involved in telling their parishioners where they can go. And so when we found out we had the opportunity to do this up in Washington, I thought it was a great thing. It would be great for Jacksonville. That means other people can go, but it really gets where we need, where I think the rubber hit the road, where people really, you know, are having problems, and some of them are reluctant, but when they see other individuals taking advantage of it, they'll realize how important it is.
549-2937, as we speak with Congressman Al Lawson about the new federal COVID site opening March 1st at the Gateway Town Center. This is one of four sites around the state, Representative Lawson. There's going to be one in Miami-Dade, one in Tampa, one in Orlando, and one in Duval. As the Biden White House noted, Duval has been identified as one of nine counties in Florida with significantly underserved or marginalized populations. Now, this site's going to be able to vaccinate 3,000 seniors per day. That's a pretty high number, higher than what we've been seeing so far at the other sites around town. Tell us more about the supply, the vaccination supply that's coming in that will enable larger numbers of people to be vaccinated each day here.
Well, that's great. It's great to try to get as many. You know, it's good to have a high goal in order to try to reach you know, the area that we're trying to get to. Simply, when you know that this month or today we're approaching 500,000 lives that are lost because of COVID-19, and quickly approaching over 30 million confirmed cases. And so it is important that since the vaccine is available, that we get it down to this area. And I think that we can do it. We got good trained personnel that will be there. And so it's just a matter, if you know, it's a significant population that is in Austin Town. And it is, and I think that we can reach that goal. I mean, you know, it's a good goal. And, you know, people can pre-register on a statewide system. They can call their county designated phone number, which is Duval. 866 in Duval, 200-3762. Let me say that again. 866-200-3762. And it'll be great to get in and get out.
And I want to clarify, Representative Lawson, will this new site open March 1st or March 3rd? We're seeing both of those dates mentioned.
We've told March 1st.
March 1st.
It is coming up real soon after this week.
Okay. And, you know, we'll go to calls in a moment. The number to talk about the new vaccination site at Gateway Mall is 549-2937. Our guest is North Florida Representative Al Lawson. We're getting a lot of tweets for you, Congressman. And the main question many people have is, when will vaccination opportunities be opened up to people who are not yet 65 years of age? Do you have any idea about that?
That's a good question. You know, so... but I can tell you is that it's going to happen soon. But, you know, we also, for example, I was communicating this past week with the superintendent of schools about teachers who, in my opinion, is first-line workers, school bus drivers and so forth, who might not be age 65, but it's essential. I think Jacksonville set the standards, especially going back to school. But we still got to get the vaccination to those people who are frontline workers and stuff. So I think it's coming up soon. And you find that some groups, and I think there are some church groups are beginning to, after they have vaccine left, beginning to give it to the younger people. And so it's coming, but, you know, right now it's 65 and above. But, you know, we got to get it down to everyone, and everyone need to take advantage of it.
How has it been up in Congress working with the DeSantis administration here in Florida on the COVID response and the vaccination rollout?
Well, I think that they are trying to do a good job, but I think some of the wrong messages went out with the vaccination in Florida, that they were only really going, had areas created. You know, if you go to Publix is more in upscale neighborhoods. And at the same time, just going to senior facilities and looking in Florida, where you only have less than 3 or 5% of people of color that are getting the vaccination, it causes a problem. So hopefully, and I've spoken to the governor's office, and I think that they're going to be more proactive. It is something that we need to do because this virus can be spread at any place, you know. And so I would say that it's been a little difficult because, you know, this is something we have never experienced before. No one never thought that we'd be in this situation. So the more we can work, the more the city officials get involved, our elected officials, and tell people, I think we can move forward. And I think the governor's office has a lot of pressure to protecting people all over the state. And there are going to be mishaps and mistakes. And so we just got to work together. This is no time to get angry with everyone. It's just to make sure that we work together to make things work. We want to save lives.
Yeah, that's the goal. We are getting tweets about this. People frustrated that more affluent communities seem to be getting the vaccinations first, asking the show, why aren't more vulnerable communities, if they're the most vulnerable, wouldn't it make sense to help them first, tweets Lee. And, you know, Congressman, just a few weeks ago, the governor said he didn't want FEMA camps coming into the state. And yet that's exactly what we're not getting FEMA camps, but we're getting FEMA administered federal vaccination sites. What about that?
Yeah, I think that probably was misspoken because, you know, any help that we can get to, you know, we have over 19 million people in the state of Florida. And so as a result, you know, when you think about Florida, even though Florida is viewed as an urban state, we have a lot of remote areas. And so FEMA know how to get to a lot of these areas because of all the hurricanes that we've had, you know, and they are the one that helped rescue people all over. So I think it's I think that was more of a misstatement than anything else. And that's one of the reasons why we're working hard, too, and was glad to work with the administration up there to have Duval designated, especially Gateway, which is very familiar to everyone.
Yeah. Your colleague in Congress, Congressman Charlie Crist, tweeted yesterday, why is Governor DeSantis playing politics with vaccine distribution? His political allies and donors should not get to skip the line. He's calling for a full DOJ investigation into how the governor is handling vaccine distribution in Florida. Do you think that that's warranted, Representative Lawson?
Well, you know, from my perspective, I'm more concerned about people getting the vaccine and saving lives. And, you know, you have to sometime leave politics out of the issue and get out there to help people. And that's what I'm really trying to do. And I know that from the start, we might have started off wrong, but we got to get it right. And I think that I don't know whether there should be a full-scale investigation as much as we got the opportunity right now. Coming up next week, boy, we can do 3,000 people a day in Jacksonville. We're going to be in great shape.
Yeah, that is huge news for this town. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with North Florida Representative Al Lawson about the new federal vaccination site that will open March 1st at the Gateway Town Center for residents 65 and older and other populations eligible to be vaccinated against COVID-19. They're expected to vaccinate up to 3,000 people every day at this new site. Here's a tweet for you, Congressman, from a listener. What sort of outreach is being done to combat vaccination hesitancy among communities of color here in Jacksonville? So getting people to agree to take the shot.
That's a very good question. And a task force has been formulated. Not only am I a member of the task force, but we have a Representative Val Demings out of Orlando and Representative Frederica Wilson out of the Miami area. And the bishops and all of the denominations in the state of Florida, whether they're AME, Primitive Baptist, Pentecostal, all of them have been meeting on a regular basis. And in fact, a couple of the meetings have taken place in the Duval area to see how we can reach the people. So it's led by the Reverend R.B. Holmes in Tallahassee, who is from Jacksonville, and how we can get the communication out to everyone in the area. So I think that we're going to do that. It is incumbent upon us to make sure this happens so we can save a lot of lives. And so that was a very good question. I'm glad that question was really asked.
Yeah.
But we're working on it every day, every week, to make sure that they get this message out. Bishop Richardson there downtown in the Jacksonville area is leading the charge over there. They're working with media, radio station, newspaper, black churches and the press to get this message out to everyone. There'll be some reluctance, we know, from people, but this is the way that it's going to happen. And not only people of color we're trying to get to the average person that is very reluctant and say, oh, this might not happen to me.
And forgive me, because I don't know your exact age. Have you gotten the vaccination yet?
Yes.
You have?
I took my second shot on Thursday of last week.
Any reaction? Any side effects?
No, you know, sometimes just a little soreness in my left arm, but nothing else that I can think of.
That's good to hear. And we're speaking with North Florida Representative Al Lawson. He represents Jacksonville and Tallahassee in Congress. What are your questions about the new federal vaccination site opening March 1st at Gateway? Curtis on the north side. Curtis, go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, guys. Senator Lawson, when do you see, if you see, a mandate coming down where you have to have the vaccination, everyone, in order to board planes, trains, and buses, any public transportation, sir? Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, that's a very good question.
Yeah.
And because the numbers are going down in hospital confinements and people are getting the vaccination, even though that had been anticipated, but I don't think it's going to happen if we continue to see those numbers going down and the curtailing number of deaths that are going on, and people wearing masks, washing their hands on a regular basis, you know, staying distance and those areas. I think that it probably won't happen. But I can tell you one thing. If you're riding a bus, the transportation system beginning to really follow through to make sure that people are safe when they're going to work, when they're coming home, you know, and because it's, you know, you got bus drivers and kids on these bus and so forth. And so I think that it's going to be a while, but it had been anticipated. And we're hoping that we can turn this whole thing around come April, May, and June. We hope to see a significant change. And, you know, hopefully by the end of the year, life could actually get better. You know, President Biden has already mandated masks on public transportation. So you're going to see people on in order to get on the bus, they're going to have on a mask.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the bus driver is going to have to turn them around. And there will probably be security. We don't want to cause any incidents. But public transportation is critical. That is a very, very good question. So you're going to see that happening. If that doesn't work, then there's a possibility something else would happen.
Can you tell us, before we let you go, what else is being done to speed more vaccine supply around the country? There's so much urgency around this, given that new and more contagious and even more deadly variants of the virus are spreading, in Florida especially.
Well, you know, Florida is also an international state with all of the traffic that is coming in Miami and other places. And so people are coming from other countries, which, you know, we've been known about this virus for a little time now. And I think that what we're going to have to do is to make sure that when we take up this new package, this stimulus package, which we are taking up this week to pass it out of the House, it's about $1.9 trillion. I know it seems like a lot of money, but it's needed to jumpstart this economy and at the same time make sure we get more vaccine and get it out to all of the places that it need to be. So it's critical. We have a tough job this week to get it over to the Senate and at the same time to make sure that we follow along. This has been the president's number one priority. And not only for unemployment, stimulus dollars coming down to each individual. We gave $600 in December, another $1,400 with this $2,000 that we got coming to help stimulate the economy, unemployment insurance dollars that are coming down, money for our school system so they'll be able to deal with it. So we have a lot on the plate, but it's the significant and most important is getting more vaccine from not only the two that we have. He has created an entire plan where there wasn't one. We didn't really have a plan. We didn't know that. But now they've created a plan, and everybody's working together, and I think we can make it. It's on fast track. 200 million more doses of the vaccine right now that is coming down, 200 million. Mm. And so that's going to be significantly important.
Can't get here soon enough. And I want to thank you so much for your time. North Florida Representative Al Lawson on the line from Washington today. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. And thank you, Melissa, for getting this message out.
Again, the new Gateway federal vaccination site for seniors primarily to be vaccinated is set to open March 1st. We'll continue to provide details about how you can access this and get your appointment here on 89.9 and at our website, wjct.org, and much more coming up. Speaking of WJCT, later we'll tell you how WJCT television becomes Jack's PBS. But up next.
And sometimes if you have a bright child, it helps to be in the top 10% at a less expensive school than the top 50% at a very prestigious school.
It's that time of year. High school seniors are getting those acceptance and rejection notices for colleges. Parents are wondering how on earth they're going to pay for it. Author Michelle Larson has some timely tips on how to make college affordable in her new book. We'll speak with her next.
In celebration of Henry Louis Gates Jr.'s new documentary, The Black Church, WJCT is collecting stories and memories of your experiences. What does the Black Church mean to you? What role has it played in your life? Share your thoughts and memories and have your stories archived for future generations. Visit wjct.org/blackchurch for instructions.
Anthology Turntable Tuesday can now be heard at noon and 9 p.m. every Tuesday on the WJCT app and 89.9 HD3. Join us for music from vinyl on Anthology Turntable Tuesday, part of WJCT's Jacksonville Music Experience.
BritBox and PBS Passport are now offering the best of all your favorite British drama, comedy, and more when you sign up at jacksbundle.com. Start watching today.
Welcome back. Well, it's that time of year when many high school seniors are learning where they will be going to college. The big question their parents have is, how are we going to pay for all of this? College costs are skyrocketing, just as the Biden administration is considering canceling some student debt. But that could be several years off, and those bills are still going to be coming in next year for many students. I spoke about all of this with author Michelle Larson. She has some great tips for parents and students in her new book, Knowledge for College. Take a listen. Hey, Michelle, thanks for being with us. Good to talk to you.
You too. Thanks for having me.
So you bring a lot of common sense into the entire college planning process. This is the time to be discussing this because kids are getting acceptance letters from colleges and universities. And parents are sitting around wondering how they're going to pay for all of this.
Exactly, exactly. And it's financial aid month today, this month, February. So.
Yeah, exactly right. So let's talk about your book, Knowledge for College. Lots of great information in here that I'm also taking notes about for our kids. And you know, the coronavirus has changed everything. Let's begin there. Hasn't that changed
sure.
the game when it comes to kids' aspirations for where they're going to college and parents' framing of how they're going to pay for college?
It absolutely has. And, you know, it's just one of the sad effects of the whole COVID pandemic is that even the kids here in Florida, where we're a little bit more open than some other states, are not as excited about going to college. There's just not the drive and the push to go this year and part of last year. And so it's kind of a sad side effect, but I still think we need to be smart in the way we plan for college and the way we pay for college.
Right. And basically, there are lots of tips in your book, but for me, the big takeaway in your book is adjust your expectations. You know, don't you know, shoot for the moon. Be practical about college because parents underestimate how much it's going to cost. And they set their sights on an elite college or university when their child might do just as well at a less expensive, less prestigious place. That's really the basic message you're giving, isn't it?
That's correct, yes. And sometimes if you have a bright child, it helps to be in the top 10% at a less expensive school than the top 50% at a very prestigious school. You can make a better name for yourself. I mean, you know, 90% of the colleges are going to provide a great education. But somewhere along the way, we just got off track a little bit thinking, oh, no, we can only go here. You know, you hear about these stories, especially on the East Coast, where people are planning kindergarten. They have to go to this kindergarten so they can get into XYZ prestigious school, and that just doesn't make sense to me. I think we set a budget, and then we, you know, I'm all for trying. I'm all for getting into the prestigious school, but rather than just looking at the name brand of the school, I think we also have to have finances as part of the conversation. Son or daughter, here's what we can afford. Here's our budget for college. If you get into a prestigious school and that's what it costs, then we'll happily send you there. But if not, then have a great plan B and go there. College is what you make of it. If you go there with a bad attitude, you're not going to get as much than if you just went in and said, this is my plan B that became my plan A due to finances. And there's nothing wrong with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Because as you point out, kids are finally realizing how it's a terrible start to life to go into the workforce saddled with a huge amount of debt. And if your child can't pay, you, the parent, are going to be paying for that in one way or another. So the less debt, the better. There's so much practical information in this book about financial aid, scholarships. And what would you say is the most common question you get from families when they're going through this process? What's the most maddening or overwhelming part of it?
So there's a lot. Just when to start, timeline. So I included a timeline in the book. But one of the things, of course, that everybody wants to know about is how to pay, how to get scholarships. And what I remind families is that you're going to get the most money at the school where you apply. So if you've got a bright child, then there are merit scholarships. If your child is good in other ways, we have to look for the college that fits the kid. We can have an affordable college experience, especially here in Florida with Bright Futures. We just have to make sure that the strength of our children matches what the college is looking for, and that's relatively easy to do. You're going to get the most money at the college level from the college in financial aid awards from them. Don't be afraid to apply to a private college because they typically have more money to give you, and they're very competitive with state schools. And, I go to these financial aid award, or I used to when they had them, financial aid banquets, and here's all about financial aid. And people would say there's trillions of dollars in unclaimed scholarships. And I would see all the parents' heads go down, trillions of dollars. I know we can get into that. Hmm. But those are it's like winning the lottery. Those are really hard to get. I one time spoke to a scholarship expert, and she was touting how her child had won $1 million in scholarships. And what a great thing, right? I'm not discounting that. And I said, well, by the way, how many scholarships did he apply for? 238.
Oh, wow.
And how many did he get? 7. So, I guess if you want to take it as a part-time job, there's money to be had. And I applaud those kids that get it. But it's not what we think, right? We think, well, if we put in 10, we'll at least get one. My big thing is look to the college and also look for local scholarships. Does your Chamber of Commerce have a scholarship? Does your place of employment have a scholarship? What other charity organizations might have a scholarship? Look on high school websites. They typically will have a list of scholarships. And here's a tip. It doesn't have to be your own high school. Look on surrounding high school websites for list of scholarships and apply to as many local scholarships as you can.
Interesting. It's so much work for parents and kids that you can understand the drive in recent years for reducing the cost of college overall. An undergraduate degree is what a high school degree used to be. That there shouldn't be so many barriers to getting a college education, financial and otherwise. What are your thoughts about that?
I think, and again, we'll speak to Florida because we have Bright Futures. So if I were a parent, I would pay whatever money to prepare my child for the ACT or the SAT. Make sure you get good grades in high school and tap into that. It's full tuition and fees. And if they have to live at home, they go to UNF, have to live at home. From finances, you could almost go there for free. So there are resources there. I guess what I would say is just make sure you take advantage of the resources.
And pick up this book, Knowledge for College, a common sense guide, like dollars and cents, for college planning. Author Michelle Larson, a certified college planner. Great advice, Michelle. Thank you.
Thank you.
Community groups rallied Saturday at Jacksonville City Hall, and they called on city leadership to speak out against what they call anti-mob legislation proposed by Governor Ron DeSantis. This is an ongoing fight over House Bill 1. This legislation would increase penalties for violent protests in Florida. Florida, now one of 25 states where Republicans are pushing similar legislation. Let's get more about this as we welcome Michael Sampson of Jacksonville Community Action. He's on the line. Hi, Michael. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa. How are you doing today?
Good to have you. You wanted to hear where Mayor Lenny Curry stands on HB1. That was part of the rally you held at City Hall Saturday. And this is a proposed piece of legislation that would increase penalties against protesters, particularly protests that become violent. Before we get into your action on Saturday and your position, can you explain a little bit more about this legislation and what it would do?
So this legislation was originally drafted by Governor Ron DeSantis last year following the wave of Black Lives Matter protests that we saw kind of sweep the nation. And the legislation was actually officially released on the day of January 6th, the governor, as well as the Senate president and the Speaker of the House, released this legislation and kind of timed it to say that, oh, this is in response to the Capitol insurrection that occurred. However, most people know that this is actually in response to the Black Lives Matter protest that occurred. And what this legislation does is essentially tries to criminalize protests. It seeks to intimidate people from hitting the streets like what we saw in Jacksonville last year. And it adds special categories in which laws already exist to deal with, you know, riots and violence. However, this bill seeks to add, you know, special things in it that we just haven't seen across the nation, such as if you have a demonstration of over seven people and one person gets violent, then all of a sudden, all seven of those people and everybody at that rally would be subject to felonies.
Even if the other person wasn't violent, they would still be charged with a felony. So this bill, I'm reading through the language, it would remove liability for drivers who strike a protester during a march. That's mm-hmm. that. Now, that's a reference to when protesters take over roadways, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a reference to when protesters take over roadways. But actually, we've seen, and there was a study that showed a lot of protesters, peaceful protesters, getting hit by cars. So it hasn't been an issue in which protesters blocking roadways have obstructed traffic, at least not in the state of Florida. I know not in Jacksonville, but it's apparently enough of an issue for the governor that he wants to create a law against it and give people immunity. So our fear is that we've had a wave of racist vigilantism last year in response to the Black Lives Matter protests. This legislation seeks to give those persons immunity, you know, if they strike peaceful protesters. And I think a lot of people are fearful of this legislation because of what it does and the kind of precedents that it sets. You know, we just had a Super Bowl in Tampa in which, you know, hundreds and thousands of Tampa fans hit the streets, albeit without masks, a lot of them, and we saw no law enforcement there arresting people who were taking over the streets and blocking traffic. However, you can bet that this legislation would be used primarily depending on the issue that people are protesting there for. So if you're protesting and you're right, if you're out in the streets and obstructing traffic because the Tampa Bay Buccaneers just won the Super Bowl, you won't get prosecuted. But if you're out there in the streets because a young African-American man was killed by the police and there's no justice, all of a sudden you're subject to misdemeanor and possibly felony offenses. We think this is a bill meant to stifle the Black Lives Matter movement.
More about this proposed legislation. Anyone who throws an object at law enforcement would face an automatic 6 months in jail. If you're arrested during a protest that is deemed violent, you would be denied bail before an initial court hearing. Anyone who organized or funded a protest deemed violent would be treated as members of an organized crime group, thus giving law enforcement the ability to bring more serious charges. If this legislation passes, do you think it will have that intended effect of dampening protests around the state?
I think it would speak to. I do know that there is a, you know, there's a resiliency that a lot of people learned from last year, in which they understand that protesting is what gets the goods. You know, it's what makes those in the elected office listen. So I think I think the point of this legislation is to stifle people's passion, energy. I don't think that would be successful, because I think that's kind of irreversible, given what, you know, the mass of the people have learned about the nature of protest and what it does to get the goods. However, it's just something that we shouldn't have to deal with. You know, we're in the middle of a pandemic in which this state has been really ineffective in making sure that people's needs are met when it comes to housing, unemployment. However, the first priority of this governor, which is why this bill is called HB1, is to stifle protest, which is why we have to be against it. I think another provision in this legislation is that it makes it so that law enforcement funding can never be touched. So let's say if you have a movement in this city in which you want to see more money spent into social spending, social services, to parks and recreation, mental health services, and you want to take a little bit of that budget from law enforcement, the budget is around $480 million. Let's say you want to take $2 million from that to move to social services. Well, this bill makes it so that Tallahassee gets to decide the city of Jacksonville's budget. So that's why we were in front of City Hall, because we've gotten support from Councilman Garrett Dennis, Councilwoman Brenda Priestley Jackson. But this legislation really, you know, takes away local jurisdictions' ability to decide how their money is spent. And we always hear the rhetoric of small government and all that jazz, but this legislation seeks to really move Florida, especially with Governor DeSantis, into mainly an authoritarian type of state in which Tallahassee has the power to decide how money is spent in Jacksonville. We think that shouldn't happen.
You and other groups rallied Saturday at City Hall saying this is racist legislation. You asked Mayor Curry to denounce it. Any response from the mayor's office?
We have not heard anything, but we're hoping that it was Mayor Curry last year who said that protests in Jacksonville were peaceful. Sheriff called the Black Lives Matter movement the civil rights movement of our time. We're asking them to take a stand against this legislation. Jacksonville has, you know, Jacksonville, you saw protests last year in which you saw people getting arrested after demonstrations, and mostly 98% of those people had their charges dropped. You know, so think about this legislation. So much is put into the subjective opinions of the officers there, you know, a violent or disorderly rally. So those 50 so protesters who were arrested, and the state attorney deemed those arrests as not, you know, being proper and dropping their charges, well, those people would have stayed in jail for a much longer time. Because the provision in the bill is that you get no bail if you're arrested at a disorderly protest. So, you know, police officers, I'm sure, make mistakes all the time. But what you're doing is you're making them the judge in this situation to file additional charges and additional jail time. That I think that, you know, peaceful protesters like what we've seen in Jacksonville throughout our history, really, I think that it kind of criminalizes us. And, you know, there's been a wave of reform bills being pushed to curtail police violence, and we feel as though those bills should be being heard, as opposed to HB1 and SB 484, which is a bill that we fear is going to have consequences that I just think the state isn't ready for.
Now, as you mentioned, it has raised eyebrows that the governor has named this legislation as a top priority for his administration, given the state's many challenges in this pandemic. Many are viewing his priorities through the prism of what most people believe to be his presidential aspirations. If Governor DeSantis is reelected for a second term in 2022, he's widely expected to run for president in 2024. How do you see that?
That's for sure. I mean, you can definitely see it in regards to, you know, his belief is that he won Florida. You know, Trump won Florida. Therefore, he needs to follow down that same path. And, you know, I think as you, I think you tweeted this out a couple days ago, Melissa, everything that he does should be viewed through this 2024 prism. Of course, he has to win re-election next year, of course. So I think it should be viewed through that prism as well. You know, attacks on changing the way mail-in ballots can be done. Voter registration, that's legislation he just released last year. Attacks on public sector unions, teachers unions. You know, this legislative session, we've seen attacks on labor, we see attacks on community organizing, and we see attacks on our right to vote. So I think it's pretty obvious that he wants to make it that, you know, next year he has a pretty easy time winning re-election. Hopefully it can carry him to 2024.
We're almost out of time, but I want to bring it back to Jacksonville as Mayor Curry is announcing a new initiative for the city's urban core this week. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, we've last year, you know, presented to him ideas for people's budget and ways to reallocate funding towards those priorities. We're hoping that that his initiative does that, you know, invest in the urban core, invest in communities in Jacksonville that have long not had that investment. So I'm anxious to see what it is.
Well, I want to thank you for your time. Michael Sampson of Jacksonville Community Action joining us this morning. Michael, thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but in a moment, a conversation with our CEO, David McGowan, as WJCT Television becomes Jack's PBS, the new umbrella for our expanding universe of over-the-air broadcast and lots of digital streaming content. We're going to tell you how you can access it and how you can learn more after this. You're listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. We'll be right back.
Webster University offers Masters of Arts in Counseling and Graduate Business programs, including the MBA, Cybersecurity, and Master of Health Administration. Information session on February 23rd on Zoom at noon. Further information at webster.edu/Jacksonville.
Last week, the CDC released new guidance on when and how to reopen schools during the pandemic, but some experts say those recommendations are flawed.
How is it that restaurants and bars and even indoor water parks in some states are open, and casinos for that matter, and schools are not?
Why kids aren't in classrooms yet on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Tomorrow starting at 5 on WJCT News 89.9.
Millions of Texans endured days of sub-freezing temperatures without heat, electricity, or even water after the state government there failed to ensure its independent power grid could hold up to a winter storm. University of Houston energy expert Ed Herz joins us to talk about what the state will need to do to avoid a repeat of one of the toughest weeks in Texas history. That's next time on Think.
Tonight at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Born in 1876, Eartha White was a philanthropist, activist, and humanitarian in Jacksonville. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Tim Gilmore, author of In Search of Eartha White, Storehouse for the People. We'll discuss gentrification in Winter Park's Hannibal Square neighborhood, That and more on Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Peter O'Dowd.
Anchor swimmer for the USA is Dara Torres.
Dara Torres is one of the most decorated swimmers in Olympic history, but the pressure to perform and look a certain way led her to a severe eating disorder. She'll talk about that struggle in a new documentary, and we'll talk with her next time on Here and Now.
Tomorrow, starting at 2, here on WJCT News 89.9.
The president has news for those pushing him to back a plan that would cancel $50,000 in student debt.
What will you do to make that happen?
I will not make that happen.
Biden is open to some form of student loan forgiveness. What would it look like, and who stands to benefit most? I'm Jen White. That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, this year, WJCT Television is expanding its mission and its brand. All of our broadcast and digital content will now be under a new name, Jax PBS, and you can still access everything from streaming to broadcast content and more. I spoke about it with WJCT CEO David McGowan.
Hi, David. Thanks so much for being with us.
I'm delighted. Good morning.
This is a big day for WJCT as we announce we are now Jax PBS. Let's talk about this.
Well, yes. And just to clarify, we are Jax PBS on TV. Mm-hmm. We are changing the name of our TV service from WJCT TV to Jax PBS.
And what drove that decision?
Well, Melissa, there are a couple of things that are coming together to really motivate us to do this. One is that we are now available as a TV service in so many places, and the way that we are all watching TV is changing so quickly. I'm sure many of our listeners and you and me, mm-hmm. all right, we're all watching Netflix and Hulu and Passport and all of these different ways of getting TV. And WJCT TV, in fact, in the last year has become available on our website as a live stream, on our app. We have an on-demand streaming service called Passport. So we felt that WJCT, those call letters which have for so many years denoted an over-the-air broadcast service, just started to feel a little bit out of date. So that was one reason for the change. You know, another reason is that in a very cluttered media landscape, we really wanted to become as easy for our audience to find as possible. And, you know, we've all had the experience of describing WJCT TV, mm-hmm. and we often say, hey, it's the local PBS service. And so we had the opportunity to work closely with PBS to define a local identity that takes advantage of a brand which, by the way, is the most trusted American institution for 17 years in a row.
That's right.
So we took that opportunity and we're very excited about it.
It's funny. I was always told WJCT, when those call letters were first created, stood for Jacksonville Community Television. We still are that. But as you're pointing out, there are so many other ways now people can access this content. And you see this as an improvement for the viewer. It's more ways to access our programming.
That's right. And we make it easier to find by using those PBS letters and that identity. And, you know, we're really excited to do it. It's not a change we take lightly. We've been WJCTV since our founding more than 60 years ago now. We know some people still refer to us as Channel 7, even though many of us, right, don't find us on Channel 7 if you're using Comcast or AT&T or Passport or any of the other ways of finding us. So it's important that we provide a lasting identity for the future that will be easy to recognize and that relates to all the different ways that our service is available and the way our services are changing.
people that watch PBS Kids, PBS Create, all of the television shows that people love, everything will stay the same. They'll still be able to watch all of those shows.
That's right. Absolutely. All of those services, whether it's PBS Kids, will become known as Jax PBS Kids, Jax PBS Create, Jax PBS More, all of the many television services that we offer will continue to be available in all of the same places and more as we go forward as they are today. And again, people may not realize that although we are a PBS member and we receive most of our program from PBS, we schedule our own programming from other sources. We will continue to do that. Our Thursday Night Music Thursday series, our Saturday Night British Dramas, all of those services mm-hmm. and programs which we acquire independently of PBS, we will continue to do that. But we're really excited to have this new identity. And by the way, it looks terrific on the air.
It really does. And there are so many new offerings that you've kind of brought under our media tent since you've been here, including BritBox for people that love television from Great Britain. People having access to that streaming service through a special offer we have here at Jax PBS. It's all on our website, too, so people can learn more.
That's right. And our on-demand viewing, of course, is taking off like crazy, as it is everywhere. And that service, which will be known now as Jax PBS Passport, again, making that very easy to find. Yeah, you're right, Melissa. That is now offered either as a standalone service or in a bundle with BritBox, if you're really interested in those great British dramas and British mysteries, or with CuriosityStream, if you're more interested in documentaries. So we're providing more and more ways for our supporters to get value from supporting us, and that's something that we'll continue to do, and that in some ways is easier to do with this new identity.
Our CEO, David McGowan, thanks for the update.
Thanks, Melissa.
And look for more about this later this week, and you can check it all out online at our website, wjct.org. Lots of news there, too. That's our show. Thanks so much for listening. And to all of our guests and callers, along with producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, news director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. If you missed any part of today's show, catch our podcast later today wherever you like to listen, or you can always download our WJCT app and listen there. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect at WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great Monday. Keep masking up.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.